Megan, I appreciate you taking time out of your busy schedule to talk a little bit about your film.
Absolutely.
So your film is The Ice Cream Truck, and I got a chance to see it a little bit early before it was released. But I always like to do this with the directors. If you could possibly give your summary a bit about what The Ice Cream Truck is about.
The Ice Cream Truck is about Mary, who is a mother in her mid-30s who lives in progressive Seattle and moves back to her suburban hometown. While her family is still kind of tying up loose ends and her kids are finishing up school, she moves into her new house alone. So she's kind of a fish out of water, moving back to a place where she used to live, and it's quite different than what she remembered. And there are all types of fears all around her, being, you know, the ice cream man being one of them, and a lot of other different, more subtle fears are kind of circling her throughout the film as well.
With this film, where did the idea for it come from originally?
Well, I lived in an area of Los Angeles that happened to have a lot of ice cream trucks, and I've lived in L.A. for 15 years now, and I'm from suburban Detroit, and until I had moved to this particular area, which had been only a couple of years ago, I had not heard that many ice cream trucks that frequently since living in Michigan. And it just really took me back to what it was like to live in a more suburban environment. And it just kind of, I knew there was a story there. I wasn't sure what kind of story I wanted to tell. But that's how it started. And, you know, they say, write what you know. I'm a mid to late 30s mom. So I felt like that was a voice kind of missing in the genre space.
And it is actually a unique story, and that surprised me in a good way when I was watching it, because initially when I saw, okay, the ice cream truck, I figured, okay, maybe we're going to have kind of a straightforward slasher, but it was a lot more than that. You know, everybody says there's usually not a lot of originality in Hollywood, but was it a bit of a challenge to keep it from becoming just a straight slasher, or did you just write it with what you were going with and, you know, what you got was a great original product?
Well, the horror films, I mean, I love the horror genre, but I don't love everything in horror. I'm not a huge fan of, like, torture porn or stuff that's extremely gratuitous. I like the horror films of the 60s and 70s and some from the 80s, that it was more about suspense and more about the doorknob turning, what's behind the door. So to me, that kind of waiting is what I love about scary movies. So I'm never really going to write something that's kind of the quintessential gory movie. It's just not really my style. It's not my influence. So, you know, I think I was just being authentic to what I like and the stories that I wanted to tell, and so it kind of came out from there. I do love slasher films, and I love it when villains have a voice, so I definitely wanted that element in there, but, you know, it's more of a psychological thriller. It has slasher elements, but I think when you're marketing a film, you have to kind of pick how you want to market it, because if your film kind of touches on several different genres, or there's many elements, I mean, you can't really tell that to everybody in your little one-liner or your trailer. You have to do the best to try to give them the impression of what it is the best you can, but it's never as easy. So we, you know, we went more the splasher route, and, you know, I was a little worried the horror community would be upset that it wasn't as gory, but I would say overall, they really embraced the film, and I think it is because it is something different. And, you know, I'm sure people are sick of seeing the same things, and so it was good. It was a pleasant surprise to know that originality, you know, trumped the body count. You know,
well, I think the horror community in general is open to looking at different approaches to similar, you know, material, because the horror genre is been done many, many times. Now, the two characters, you actually kind of have two stories here. One is about Mary, and then you have the ice cream truck man. Did you have someone in mind for those roles when you were writing it, or when you were casting it? Did you know the performers already, or was there a long casting process for that?
I didn't have anyone in mind when I was writing it, but I did know Deanna Russo from my circle of friends. Mm-hmm. So I didn't, you know, I knew her well, but when you've worked in Hollywood for a long time, you still don't want to put people on the spot, especially, you know, I'm a relatively new filmmaker in the sense of a director, even though I've been a producer for a long time. Being a writer-director was relatively new. This is only my second feature. So I just sent the script to Deanna and asked her for notes and just kind of wanted to put out feelers, and she loved it. And so it was a done deal. She was like, you know, I'd love to do this if you're interested in me. And then with regard to the Ice Cream Man, that one was a trickier one. That was the one role we went out to the most people. We thought we needed a name. It was hard to find someone that could be scary but slightly comedic without it going too far in either direction, because I knew I didn't want it to be a monster and I didn't want it to be a joke. So that was a hard thing to find. And we had a TV actor, a known TV actor attached at a certain point who ultimately couldn't do it. And then a manager had her client, Emil Johnson, put himself on tape for me, which was the only audition I saw, and I knew instantly that he was amazing, that he was, you know, a method actor. I could tell he got the part, he understood. There was such intensity in his face when he wasn't talking, which was so important for the role, because it's not just the dialogue, it's, you know, all mm-hmm. the kind of subtext and everything underneath. And I think we just lucked out, because the cast in the film is beyond what I could have imagined.
Yeah, it turned out really well. I really liked Deanna's approach. She was a very expressive performer, and I think that came mm-hmm. through, which kind of gave this film almost a stage type feel to it in, mm-hmm. in some respects with her performance. I thought that came through really well. Now, where did you, I have to ask, where did you find the ice cream truck? Because I loved the retro ice cream truck you have in here. It was like a character in itself. Was there a long uh-huh. process to find that, or did you have that, picked out, or?
No, we didn't. I knew I didn't want some dingy truck. I had no idea what I was going to do. We just started going on Craigslist and just looked around, and, you know, I tried to find people that were selling their trucks. That mm-hmm. was the first way to go. And then I figured we would use art department or what have you. But then I found this vintage truck on eBay or Craigslist, I can't remember which, that was like an old milk truck. And I found that it was a company that restores these old trucks. They do Divco milk trucks and Harvester Metros, which is what the truck was in the movie. And I just called them up and I said, hey, would you ever want to do one for a movie, you know, on loan? And, you know, I love what you guys do. And I didn't dare dream they'd say yes. And they did. So it was a really great experience working with them. Yeah, they're called Laguna Vintage, and they're in Laguna Beach, and they do these super cool trucks from the 50s and 60s. So, yeah, we really lucked out, and it really went with the story, and it all just kind of worked. And I think that's when you know you're onto something, is if everything is kind of falling into place like that.
Well, and I think it added to the suburban character, because a lot of people associate suburbs with, I think, 50s and 60s when they were on the big uh-huh. rise, you know, the style of housing and that. And I thought it worked really well with all of that there. And with the Mary character, I really enjoyed the approach here of how she was something that I don't think you see out of your main character too often, at least out of a female role, is someone who's kind of wanting to relive her childhood. And in some uh-huh. spots, she does actually go to places uh-huh. that I think will surprise people. Was there any hesitation or anything when you're writing a character like this, going, oh, I'm not sure how people are going to take this? Or do you just go with it and say, you know, you take my character how I write it?
I think you just create good characters, and then you let your characters do what they need to do. I don't mm-hmm. outline my stories, so they literally take me where they're going. And where she ends up going is not necessarily what I thought I was going to do. I thought it would be too cliche for her to cross the line like that.
Sure.
The characters it just worked. Mm-hmm. And it was like, by the time you get towards the end of the film, like, I wanted it to happen, you know? And I think I've talked to Deanna Russo about it. She was like, no, I don't want this to happen, when she was reading it initially. No, no, no. And then she wanted it to happen. And I feel like that's what everyone's felt, is like, I had no intention of that really happening, just kind of her flirting with the Max character. And, you know, it felt the most right. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think it worked out. So, and as, again, women are constantly being bashed over the head with, you know, feelings of, we need to look young, and, you know, youth, and so it's something that we all deal with, that I think that men don't have to deal with necessarily in the same level. And, you know, you're either 20s, the stories are either your 20s or younger, or you're totally middle-aged and you're, you know, 40s or older. But everyone forgets about this kind of middle range when you're in your 30s, where you're just kind of right in the middle of being young and totally accepting that you're middle-aged and beyond. And it was just felt like a story that, or a point of view that needed to be addressed, I thought.
Yeah, it was a great point of view. And like I said, a pleasant surprise of the direction she took. Now, I enjoy the cast of characters you brought around her. The Max character especially, her and John Redlinger, who plays her, really had good chemistry together. Did that help with the film? And did you kind of tailor their parts a little bit as you saw the two performers together?
I just really wanted to try to find the right person to play Max, who didn't look too young, you know, but could pass. I mean, they're actually, some of the reviews I know give, say that they think they're too close in age, and they're not. I mean, they're like 15 years apart. So
sure. In
real life, believe it or not. But I, you know, I wanted to find someone that didn't look so young that would be gross.
Right.
You know? And, they had great chemistry, and he seemed like the kind of guys that I went to high school with that I could see having that type of personality. So I could only just draw from my, you know, remembering what that was like. And I think he did a great job. Yeah, I think their chemistry is great.
Yeah, and also what was great I enjoyed was the other characters, like the suburban moms that show up. They were hilarious, and I've met people like that. Were you drawing from experience then when you were creating those characters?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I know that when I go home to Michigan, you know, sometimes I'm asked the questions that feel judgy, and I think we all do. Because small talk, it's like you only have stock questions that you usually ask people. And it's, you know, for me, those are the questions that I least like to answer, because you're giving some quick answer that doesn't encompass anything. I'd rather talk about, like, what music are you listening to than, you know, other things sometimes. So, yeah, and that Hillary Barrett, who plays the neighbor, she does a great job. And Latisse Towns Coulier, who plays the other neighbor. Mm-hmm. And then we've got Lisa Ann Walter, who is the ringleader, who has been around forever. She's in, like, War of the Worlds, and a lot of people know her from The Parent Trap with Lindsay Lohan. She has a pretty significant role in that movie. But, yeah, I mean, you know, and I think Mary's character was not really ready to have that be her life, her kind of conformist life. And, you know, I think when people don't really leave where they're from for a long time, or don't travel, or don't try to experience other things, they get kind of wrapped up in their own little bubble.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, they definitely seem to have their own little bubble around the neighborhood. And what I enjoyed about the whole feel of the neighborhood as well is, and I hope you don't mind me saying this, but I got kind of the Burbs vibe from it.
That's a good, huge compliment. I'm a big fan of that movie.
Yeah, it had a lot of vibe with that, with the characters, as well as the creepy things still going on in the neighborhood with the ice cream truck, which, going back to the ice cream truck, it almost felt like you gave the truck a little bit of a feel, like almost like a shark or a predator, the way it drove around the neighborhood.
Uh-huh. Dogging. Circling.
Mm-hmm. I kind of had the Jaws theme show up in my head when I...
Yeah, that's really interesting. Yeah, that's great. Yeah, I mean, I think to go from, you know, there's wonderful things about suburbia. Don't get me wrong. I love suburbia. It's a great place to raise your kids. And there are wonderful things about living in a city. So they're two very different lifestyles. And I thought it was, you know, a really great thing to show when someone moves back to suburbia. And, you know, the ice cream truck, it's like people are told not to take candy, or kids are told not to take candy from strangers, but no one has any issues taking stuff from an ice cream truck. And I personally know of ice cream trucks that have real ice cream that are not packaged goods. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you don't know, they could be getting ice cream out of a garbage bag in there. You have no idea what's going on in there. And it just seemed like such a creepy thing to center a story around.
Yeah, the ice cream truck, I think, needs to be the subject of even more horror films if you actually think about it too hard.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Now, what I think helped, you made this on a limited budget, but I really liked the high production quality that it looked. It didn't feel like that, and part of that was the cinematography. Now, I was reading up, you used the same cinematographer that you used in your first feature, and did that help? Did his style and knowing his style kind of help structure the look of the film overall, and how it you know, filled the frame?
Oh, well, Stephen Tringali is a very, very gifted cinematographer, and he's done a lot of documentaries. He's done a lot of features recently. And he's relatively young. I mean, I think he's probably 10 years younger than me. And he's just brilliant. And he signed on to my first film, that was also kind of a David Lynchian psychological thriller. And what he was able to do with that was even less of a budget was just amazing. So obviously, you know, most of the people that I worked with, crew wise on, and some of the actors too, on my first film, Rebound, did the ice cream truck as well, because, you know, when you're an indie filmmaker and you're doing things for one budget, you know, people are often doing favors or doing things for less than they would normally make. You better bring those people along with you, you know, to do the next one, especially if you guys work well together and that's how you can kind of develop a family. But Steven is brilliant, and we shot on a red camera, and it just looks gorgeous. I mean, he's a true talent. And, you know, between how you shoot it and post-production, that's how you make an indie film feel more expensive than it is. I mean, you cannot skimp on those details. It's really important.
Right, and that's what I love about indie film is that I think you show a little more ingenuity with direction and cinematography and everything, because you don't have a large sum of money to where you can just say, we'll just make this, when you can only do it for one night of shooting. Did you have a specific location in mind when you did shoot this? You know, the suburb, you had the suburb and then the park as well. Did you have a place in mind for this, or was there some location scouting done for it?
Well, they're all different locations. They're all different suburbs of Los Angeles. I tried to just find what I pictured in my head. And I wanted it to not look so Los Angeles looking. So, you know, we definitely drove a little ways out, like 40 minutes, 30 to 40 minutes to each location. We tried to have them match. I mean, it's not the easiest. I knew the main house, the hero house, needed to be a ranch house. We really lucked out at finding locations. It's not easy to find something that you picture, because it's so much a part of the narrative.
Mm-hmm.
But I wanted it to look like Any Town USA. I think we settled that in our heads that maybe it was like a suburb of New Mexico because they experience all different kinds of weather. It's very suburban, and they have some tropical plants and trees because you cannot avoid a palm tree here and there, no matter how hard you try. But I did try to not have them in shots as best as I could, just to not be distracting.
Well, it did feel, I think you captured most of the feel of a Midwest suburbia. I'm actually here in Wisconsin, so I.
So I know,
and when I watched and looked at it, I'm like, yeah, I've seen neighborhoods similar like that. There's some in the town that I live in like that. So.
Right. Well, where I'm from and some of the surrounding suburbs where I'm from is where it follows with shop.
Oh, okay.
So that's what it looks like where I'm from, a little bit different, but. And I couldn't go home to shoot this, but so that was the same kind of look that I was going for because it's where I'm from.
And I think, like you said, I think it captured it well. I didn't get a California feel at all from it.
That's great.
You made a previous feature as well, and were you able to bring some of that experience that you had from making that film, and did that carry over into here to kind of avoid some of the challenges you had in the first one?
Oh yeah, yes, absolutely. My first film was the first time I'd shot anything at all. I had been a producer for a long time, and being a producer only teaches you so much about actual filmmaking. It teaches you about like set life and production a little bit, you know, how to spend your money. It doesn't teach you anything about post-production or any of those other things that you learn while making a film. I'm very proud of my first film, Rebound, which was a very, you know, very low budget. I would say our first couple of days of shooting were the first maybe 10 minutes of the film, which are probably the weakest. So. Mm-hmm. That if I could do anything over, that would probably be it, only because I'd never been behind a camera before. You know, it was my first time, and yeah, it was like film school for me, but you know, I caught on real quick. And yeah, I learned so much. I mean, I think it was a transformative experience for me making that film, and so I hope, as with anything, with each one I do, it becomes better and stronger, and you just learn a little each step, you know, you take.
And it's great that you had that experience to launch in here, because this film really, I think, plays out well, and it's well paced, and you've got a lot of laughs as well as some gore in here too, which I love the practical gore effects. Was it one of those things where you planned out just to use this much gore and not go overboard? Because some films do tend to go overboard, especially in indie films.
Well, with the death scenes, I was far less concerned about gore as I was trying to do shots that were unique for a murder. I just wanted to do something different. So no choice had anything to do with how much blood I wanted to use or how much money I had. It didn't really have to do with that as much. So, you know, there's the first death scene is I wanted a face close up, and I'm just like trying to figure out innovative ways to do it. And then the second main death scene, or third, I guess technically, I wanted it to be from the victim's POV, and you know, so that one is why it's on the ice cream man, because to me I thought that was so interesting it did not cut. And, you know, when you have a classically trained actor playing a murderer, like, don't waste your time, you know, showing close-ups of a weapon. Like, show him, you know. And so that was why I wanted to do that. And I think that one in particular is one of my favorite shots of the film because it feels really intense. And so, yeah, I was just trying to figure out what are unique ways to do it because people have seen everything.
Yeah, especially horror fans.
Right.
You know, and I like that POV shot too, because it kind of put the audience in the seat of the victim. But it wasn't handled like a shot on video shot, which some POVs do. Even though they're not a shot on, you know, I mean, a found footage. even though, you know, it's not a found footage film, it doesn't have that look. And so, yeah, I thought that was a really
unique. And he really gets,
way.
Like, fake blood in his eye.
Oh, did he really?
You know? Yeah, you can see it. He starts to, like, blink because, like, the splat, the spatter, like, gets in his eye.
Oh, that
yeah, it so feels really real.
Now, you did have a minor creepy character delivery man, and I was reading up that.
Oh, yeah. Very important creepy character.
I was going to say, I heard in the Q&A, are you teasing that we may have a film in the future that may involve the creepy delivery man?
I doubt it, but if there's enough interest, I would definitely... I would definitely revisit that. Jeff Daniel Phillips is an amazing actor. I was so lucky to get him. He understood that even though his character was such a small part, it was such an important part of the film and essentially, you know, one of the scariest, real life scariest parts of the film. And he just got it. He understood, mm-hmm. and he was such a team player and really collaborative, and he had a lot of ideas for his character. And, it was just, he was an amazing find. I would love to work with him again. So,
well, I wouldn't mind seeing more of him because he definitely makes your skin crawl in the film. So,
and that's something women deal with a lot, mm-hmm. and that's not something that's touched on very much in the horror genre.
No,
like women deal with things that men don't necessarily deal with, mm-hmm. That are scary.
Yeah, usually a lot of characters, especially female characters, just kind of roll with it. But you actually see Mary's reaction to the delivery man in this one,
mm-hmm.
and
yeah.
I liked that because it felt real. Just like the dialogue in here, even though it was humorous, I've heard many conversations and been part of some just like that. For the dialogue, when you write it, is it you know, do you kind of read it over to make sure it kind of sounds natural? Because some scripts have script, you know, where it really seems like, oh, look, we're doing a joke now. You know, with their dialogue. Did it take some time to go over that, make sure that it kind of felt natural, or?
I like, you know, as I said, I like movies of the 60s and 70s. Mm-hmm. I also like David Lynch. I like when I in rehearsals, had my actors practice not responding to the other person for a few seconds, that I would make them pause and react first. Like, I wanted to see a quick reaction. And so that's where that comes from, is because I'd like the subtext to breathe. So, and it creates an atmosphere of tension.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Yeah, and it just also has a natural feel to it as well, I think.
Yeah.
At least it comes across on screen, too, so... I know you're busy and you gotta go, but just another quick question here is, any project on the horizon that people should keep an eye out for that you've got coming up?
Well, I'm trying to make a movie next year called Hunting Season, so we're just in the early stages of kind of pre-production on that.
Okay.
So hopefully that will be made next year and then maybe come out the following year, but it's probably a little bit more of a straight thriller,
mm-hmm.
But it's a fun one, and I'm looking very forward to having that be my next film.
Great, and do you have a website or a place where people can possibly check out not only Ice Cream Truck, but other stuff that you have coming up?
I have things as a producer, but nothing that's coming out soon mm-hmm. enough to really talk about.
Okay.
So.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well,
but everyone should definitely check out The Ice Cream Truck. It's mm-hmm. on VOD and on Amazon, iTunes, Vudu, and so is my first film, Rebound.
So you hear it, folks. Check that out. Megan, I want to thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule to talk to us. I appreciate it very much. And yeah, people go watch Ice Cream Truck. It's an original horror film that I think will surprise you. So, and thank you, Megan, for taking time. I appreciate this. Quite a bit.
Awesome. Thank you so much for having me.